Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Schmidt, Chief Judge Siegel, Judge Eade, the Honorable John Schmidt presiding.
Please have a seat.
Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is September 17th, 2024. We have four cases on the calendar today. Each counsel, you will have 15 minutes for your main argument, and appellant, you will have 5 minutes for your rebuttal. Take your time getting settled in at the podium. There's a button on there that will raise or lower the podium. It's sort of underneath, right in the center of the podium, and feel free to adjust it to your liking, and you can start your argument when you're ready. We'll have the marshal call the first case.
A23-1823, Taylor versus Kimbrell.
All right, appellant's counsel, when you're ready, and please make sure you say your name for the record because this will be recorded.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Catherine Ray, here on behalf of the appellant, Alan Taylor. There are a number of issues on this appeal, namely whether the court abused its discretion in declining to modify custody based on changed circumstances and endangerment, whether it abused its discretion in declining to admit rebuttal and impeachment evidence, whether it abused its discretion in making findings regarding post-trial ex parte allegations made by a respondent in an affidavit submitted after the record closed, and whether it abused its discretion in declining to make detailed findings on all motions. I'll begin with custody modification. Mr. Taylor's position is that the court erred in a number of ways. Its findings regarding changed circumstances were both contrary to the record and a misapplication of law. Its findings regarding the best interest factors and endangerment were contrary to the record and the evidence. And its balancing of harm findings contradicted the other findings and conclusions that the court made. The applicable law for custody modifications is Minnesota Statutes Chapter 518.18D4, requiring a showing that a change occurred in the circumstances of the parties or child, and that the modification is necessary to serve the child's best interests. The statute goes on to require that the court shall retain the arrangement established by the prior order unless the present environment endangers the child's physical or emotional health and the harm likely to be caused by a change is outweighed by the advantage.
So if I could ask a quick question. It seems like you're characterizing that as an error of law. Another way of looking at the district court's findings and conclusions on change of circumstances, and this would apply to endangerment, I think, also, is more of a credibility determination that she heard. I mean, she found a prima facie case was made and went to an evidentiary hearing, and she heard the testimony and considered the evidence and said, I don't think it meets that standard because I don't think that it's as extreme as appellant is claiming. So how do we get it out of that framework? Because obviously if it's a credibility issue, we defer to the district court's findings.
Well, Your Honor, briefly when it comes to credibility, I have quite the argument there when we move to the admission or exclusion of impeachment evidence. But I am, when we isolate changed circumstances, characterizing it as a misapplication of law as well as findings that are contrary to the record. But the misapplication of law argument is under both the statute and the Tarlin case, which the statute makes clear that the relevant time period is since the prior order. And all events described in Mr. Taylor's testimony, as well as his motion, did occur since the prior order. The court found the situation
I think the judge decided that it wasn't so different from, I mean, it's the same judge that presided over the initial custody proceedings, correct, in the initial order?
Yes, Your Honor.
And it seems like she considered all of the new evidence and, in fact, compared it to what she knew, I mean, what was in the record prior, and said, this isn't so different. It seems like a continuation to me, not a change. And so that's why I'm having trouble understanding why it was really a misapplication of law.
Well, Tarlin makes clear that an escalation is relevant. And first of all, Mr. Taylor did...
Just if I could ask about Tarlin, because Tarlin has a very significant difference compared to our case in that Tarlin, the district court, did not hold an evidentiary hearing, and we reversed and remanded for an evidentiary hearing to be held. And in our case here, the district court did hold an evidentiary hearing and made findings, which sort of brings it back to the chief's question about the credibility determinations and the findings that the district court made in our case.
The majority of the findings that the court made with regard to changed circumstances were regarding the time period and the continuation. And Tarlin makes clear, as well as the statute, that the start point for looking at a continuation is the time of the prior order, although the judge had been on the case since the time of the prior order. There was no... Mr. Taylor's allegations were that Ms. Kimbrell was violating the directives of the prior order. Before there was a prior order, there were no directives for her to violate. It was a new situation. Everything occurred since the prior order, which was back in 2018.
But why would that stop the court from considering, as part of a credibility analysis, things that had occurred prior to 2018? Are you saying that just because certain acts occurred before 2018 that they're not fair game for the court to consider in determining credibility?
No, Your Honor. In fact, I'm saying they are fair game because they're still since the prior order. The conditions that existed at the time of the prior order and before that were what they were. But at the time of the prior order, which was 2018, that was the starting point to assess whether there's a change in circumstances, which my client's position is certainly there was.
Can I ask you a broader question? Because at the beginning of your argument, if I'm remembering correctly, you characterized your challenge as the district court's findings were contrary to the evidence. And, you know, I know in Bender, the Supreme Court characterized the standard of review as an abuse of discretion if the findings of fact are unsupported by the evidence. So I guess my question for you is it your position that there is no evidence in the record to support the findings of fact that the district court made here? Because it seems to me, or am I misframing the standard of review? Because that's how I understand unsupported by the evidence, that you would have to identify a finding that the district court made that lacked any support in the record evidence altogether in order to win on this issue.
Yes, Your Honor, I am framing it the same way that you are. I think there's inadequate support for the finding that the circumstances are a continuation.
Inadequate is a little different than no support, though, right? I mean, inadequate sounds to me like a credibility weighing, which we can't do, right?
I would say there's no support, Your Honor. All the allegations of the escalated circumstances, every single one occurred after the prior order. So in that sense, there's really no support. Not one of the allegations in Mr. Taylor's motion or testimony occurred prior to the 2018 order. Therefore, everyone was since, and that is the word in the statute as well as in the Tarlin case, since the prior order. If I can distinguish Tarlin, Your Honor, the situation in Tarlin, I know this was whether there should be or should not be an evidentiary hearing, but it it dealt with, father was the custodial parent in that case. Father had some concerns about his daughter's weight prior to the original order. Following the order, father was daily weighing the 10-year-old daughter, and mother found this to constitute endangerment. It felt abusive. It was upsetting to the daughter. The Tarlin court made findings that there was some concern about the daughter's weight on father's part prior to the order, but that the new weighing was completely different and potentially rose to the level of endangerment, and this was something that happened since the prior order. So Tarlin was looking at something that happened before the original order and after, a bright line there, whereas in this case, everything was in fact after. Judge was talking about a continuation of things that still started after the original order. In fact, before the original order, Mr. Taylor had no custody, no parenting time.
Can I ask a question about, you've been arguing on this first issue about abuse of discretion. Mm-hmm. In your brief, you talk about the scope of review is extremely limited. Is that something that you're no longer arguing?
No, Your Honor, I'm arguing that the standard of review is abuse of discretion based on the custody modification issue, but indeed the scope is limited to whether the findings support the conclusions and the evidence supports the findings.
And that's based on your argument that a new trial motion was not filed?
Yes, Your Honor, which it is discretionary under the statute, no requirement.
But this was a special proceeding, right? And so under case law, there isn't a new trial motion required.
Yes, Your Honor, that's our position. I'm understanding your question correctly.
No, well, it's just so under case law, it says that a new trial motion is not required under 10303G because it's a special proceeding. So then our scope would be a full review under abuse of discretion standard, not the limited scope, because a new trial motion is not required to be filed to preserve review.
Yes, Your Honor, that would be the position, but alternatively, I think even with the limited scope, my client's positions are that the court misapplied the law and made findings that were contrary to the record. Anyway. If I may move on.
Yeah, please.
I'm moving on to the court's best interest findings. These are set forth in Minnesota Statutes 518.17, Subdivision 1, the best interest factors, and the court made findings on all 12. Under the Vangness case, the court is not required to weigh all factors evenly. And the first factor, which is crucially important, favored the father, child's physical, emotional, cultural, spiritual, and other needs, and the effect of the proposed arrangement on the child's needs and development. That favored father. Finding number 12, factor number 12, the court's finding on factor number 12, I think that was actually finding L in the order, deals with cooperation and co-parenting. This one was found to favor mother. That finding was contrary to the record and the weight of the evidence. All discussion by the court surrounding the parties' cooperation in that order states that both parties demonstrated challenges. There's no singling out of father whatsoever, nor any mention of respondents' favorable co-parenting or cooperation. So based on the findings, this factor appropriately would have been found to be either neutral or favoring father. The conclusion on this factor was not supported by the evidence, which leaves three other factors found to favor mother. Those include factor 6, history and nature of each parent's participation, which by virtue of the previous order, mother was awarded more time. Factor 8, effect of changes to home, school, and community. And Factor 9, effect of the proposed change on relationships between the child and significant other persons in the child's life. All these factors favoring mother are related to her historically having more parenting time, yet a parent's status as primary caretaker is not to be relied on to the exclusion of other factors under both 518.18 and the Vangness case. A finding that father is better able to meet the child's physical, emotional, cultural, and spiritual needs and other needs is crucially significant. And given the neutrality of the other factors, one was found to favor father. These three related ones found to favor mother, and the others were neutral, except factor 12, which our position is was contrary to the evidence. Because these factors favoring mother are so related, each one repeats, in fact, the language from the previous factor, it's appropriate to weight them more like one factor and to more heavily weigh the factor that favors father, the first factor.
Counsel, I see your time is up, so we will hear from you on rebuttal. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. And counsel for appellant, feel free to get settled in, adjust the podium, and again, please state your name for the record before you begin, and when you're ready, you may begin.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Rod Jensen, and I represent the respondent, Kaylee Beth Kimbrell, in this matter. I'm going to jump right in to the standard of review here. I believe it's Minnesota Rule of Civil Procedure 52.01, and that the findings of fact shall not be set aside unless clearly erroneous, and due regard shall be given to the opportunity of the district court to judge the credibility of the witnesses. In this case, Judge Charlene Hatcher presided over the initial custody trial in this matter in 2018, where she heard several days of testimony and reviewed many exhibits there. And then she also presided over essentially the exact same type of trial about 4 years later in 2022 and 2023. And her findings are sustained by the facts of this case, and her findings are fully in support of her conclusions. The district court, in our opinion, did not err in declining to modify custody. Again, the same judicial officer heard two trials approximately 4 years apart in this matter. The court went into, I think, great detail regarding all 12 of the best interest factors. There was only one factor that, and I believe the court said, slightly favored the appellant. There were four factors that squarely favored the respondent, and there were seven factors that were neutral. And because it was the appellant who was bringing the action to modify custody, I believe that neutral factors actually favor the respondent in the sense that it would indicate that there would be no need for a custody modification.
On the best interest factors, appellant's counsel recently pointed out, I mean, toward the end of our argument, about factor L, the ability of the parents to cooperate. And it seems like the findings there are neither one does a good job at that. So what supports the district court's finding that this factor favors mother?
Well, I believe in looking at that factor, I think she was very clear. Yes, they both had, I think she kind of put the burden and blame on both of them for having issues with in terms of working with each other and getting along. There's no doubt about that. But overall, the court listened to essentially 4 days of testimony this time around. More than half of that time she spent listening to the appellant. I believe his testimony went into the third day of the trial. So she heard from him in great detail in terms of what he was trying to, his message and his issues and concerns. And despite all of that, the court found that factor, L, favored mother. I thought it was telling at the very end of her commentary on that finding where she talked about, while the parents do have a challenging relationship, so she acknowledged that, the court does not find that their conflict is so significant to warrant a custody modification. And the court also, I think, looked at what mother has done over the course of the child's life to try to work with the appellant try to keep the child out of their conflict, which I think are some of the reasons why the court found that factor did favor the mother. Ultimately, the court determined that the child's present environment does not endanger the child's physical or emotional health. The appellant argues that the court should have placed a more significant weight on the first factor, dealing with the child's physical, emotional, cultural, spiritual needs. I think it's important to remember that Minnesota Statute 518.17, Subdivision 112B1, states that the court may not use one factor to the exclusion of all others. So you have to look at these 12 factors all together. I don't think you can pick one out and say that one should be given more weight. And I think the court did a admirable job in weighing all of the factors together in coming up with its decision. As I've said, the district court listened to 4 days of trial testimony, and more than half of that time it was the appellant's testimony. And after days and hours of his testimony and hundreds of pages of exhibits, the court found no endangerment. The court stated that all factors and evidence presented at the trial were considered, and the court found no endangerment of the child. A change in circumstances must be significant since the last custody order in 2018, and the facts of this case did not rise to that level. The court found that there had been no significant change in circumstances that would be grounds for the court to change the current parenting arrangements.
I'd like to turn to that point of appellant's counsel raises the issue of this wasn't a continuation, that this was an escalation. And I think rightly says that we need to look from the prior order until the new hearing. Now within that, in the 5 months prior to filing the motion, there were a lot of events that occurred. So why is that not an escalation and a continuation instead?
Well, I think, Your Honor, that this couple, not just the last 5 months, but on and off throughout the course of this child's life, they've had issues.
But the issues in those 5 months were pretty major.
Well, between the two of them, more so than I believe the child. My client kept the child out of the fray between the two of them, the disagreements between the two of them. I agree that we need to look at what's happened since the initial decision in 2018, and that's what this court did. And she heard about all of those instances. She heard about all of those issues between mother and father. She was very involved. Like I say, she's been the only, it's kind of nice because in this day and age, oftentimes we see several judicial officers on for the same case. This case has been very nice in that we've had the same judicial officer since day one. Well, that's not quite true.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Even if we disagree with you on whether or not the district court abused its discretion by determining that circumstances hadn't changed, if we agree that the modification, the district court did not abuse its discretion as to best interests or the other factors, we would still affirm, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, so I wanted to jump you just before the time runs out.
Yes.
To the some of the catch-all decisions that the district court made. And I just wanted to get your take on whether or not, or if you could point us to what findings in the record would support the district court's decision, particularly as to attorney's fees and the issue of the passport.
Yes. I don't believe, Your Honor, that the court erred in having, I think the court said a catch-all at the end. It was interesting because at the beginning of the very last day of the trial, the judge was very succinct and direct in talking about the issues that she would be deciding. And so it's on the record. She lays out all of the issues that she was going to be determining, from custody to child support to the child's passport to attorney's fees. So she did say that on the record at the beginning of the last day. And I believe that because she did not find that there had been enough evidence to change the parenting arrangement, the custody labels, that there was not enough of a reason to modify child support. It's noteworthy that in the initial decision by the court in 2018, the court gave a reduction in child support to the appellant for various reasons. So he's paying less in child support than he would otherwise be ordered to pay given the child support guidelines.
That was your client's motion, right? The child support, your counter motion. Do I have that right?
Yeah, I believe it was, Your Honor. Yes.
My questions were more about the, and I think I understand that issue, but the attorney's fees and the passport. Obviously we can review the record and make some, we can intuit some implicit findings, but I guess my concern is whether or not there's enough for us to affirm and rule for your client on those two issues. And if you disagree, what in the record supports implicit findings or explicit findings on denying the passport request that the father made and the conduct-based attorney's fees?
Well, on the attorney's fees issue, I know both sides requested attorney's fees.
But you didn't cross appeal.
Correct.
Okay.
That's correct. We did not.
From looking at the record, it seems like it was really conduct-based attorney's fees. Neither party asked for need-based.
Right.
Right? Okay.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yes.
And obviously we'll hear from appellant's counsel also on that.
Yes. But yeah, I don't think the court, so we did not appeal that issue. But I did note that I think in part because both parties were requesting fees and the court just flat out did a flat denial of that. I don't believe that it was error, any kind of error by the court by not making additional findings regarding those issues, particularly the passport or the attorney's fee
so
request.
So why not on the passport? I mean, it seems like that's independent of any change in parenting time or custody modification or anything else.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I know that both parties testified about it. There was testimony in the record by the appellant as well as the respondent about that very issue. And the court just simply did a kind of a blanket denial of those things. And I believe the court has the ability to do that. And I believe that it has something to do with the child's age as far as the passport. But yes, there are no specific findings on that. I've got just a tiny bit of time left, and I would like to discuss there were several rule violations by the appellant in preparing his brief. And I believe that there are rules and procedures for a reason.
Did you file a motion about any of these?
Did not file a motion, Your Honor. It's in my brief.
I don't see like any request for relief even in your brief. You point them out.
Yes.
But then there's no ask afterwards.
Yeah, I believe we asked that the appeal be denied, I guess, but yeah, we didn't ask that it be dismissed. In terms of, I see my time is up.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And feel free to get situated before the time starts if you need to adjust the podium or any of that.
No, I think the podium is better like this.
Okay.
In his argument, the counsel for appellant discussed credibility, as did the court in questioning me. So I want to start there. The party's testimony differed on numerous issues, and throughout the court's order, this is acknowledged and clear. The court found that the party's relationship is acrimonious throughout its order, as well as found that the testimony differed. Credibility was a huge factor here, where the party's testimony was so different on so many things. On day 3 of the trial, February 13th, 2023, Ms. Kimbrell testified on the witness stand that she didn't call the police on Mr. Taylor. Mr. Taylor sought to introduce evidence on rebuttal in the form of witnesses who were the very police officers who responded when she called the police, as well as to introduce those police reports. He submitted these rebuttal exhibits in March, prior to the final date of trial, which was April 6th. These witnesses and exhibits were not allowed. Now, concededly, most of what these police officers would have testified was not intimately related to the custody issue, but it had such great tendency to show the party's credibility, or Ms. Kimbrell's lack thereof, which was hugely important in this case. Its probative value there was enormous.
How is it prejudicial if the court doesn't believe mother's testimony? It's your client's burden, so it seems like a bigger problem would be some sort of exclusion of evidence to support your client's testimony. court at the end of the day says, I don't really find, it's an acrimonious relationship, I don't really find there's a lot of credibility on both sides, and says, I'm not going to grant this modification, then how is your client prejudiced by the exclusion of that evidence? I understand, obviously, your client's disappointed and prejudiced by the denial of the motion, but by the exclusion of the evidence, how does that prejudice your client?
Well, if credibility is at issue and the court were to think that my client is not credible, this particular evidence on this issue certainly would show that one party was dishonest on the witness stand and my client was credible. It would enhance his credibility enormously. He testified that she did call the police. She testified that she didn't. These police officers would testify that indeed she did, and my client was telling the truth. That would support his credibility, I think, on other issues where the party's testimony differed as well. And in addition to that, had a tendency to show that Ms. Kimbrell was the party who was creating the acrimony. Counsel for the respondent said that the court can't give more weight to one factor. In fact, it can under the Vangness case. Doesn't mean it has to, but it's correctly it can. Does not need to weigh factors evenly. And when we move to the passport issue, the court made no findings to support its denial of that and other requests. But it's important to note that its other findings throughout its order support the need for the court issuing an order on the passport. The contentious relationship between the parties and my client's allegation that she interfered with every vacation he attempted to take, it is the very reason giving rise to his request not only that parenting time is enforced, which was something that he did request both in his motion and on page 7 of the transcript from February 13th, 2023, but also gives rise to his request for the passport. There were no findings that he hadn't met his burden or that the passport, nothing to support the conclusion to just deny basically every request made other than the few that the court did rule on, the modification, namely. Another.
Counsel, I'm sorry, but I see your time has expired.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both, counsel, for your argument today. The case is submitted, and we will issue an opinion within the statutory time frame. With that, you're free to go, and we'll move on to the next case.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both.